Comedy Zone Radio.
Welcome back, everyone, to Roni Zone Radio. This is Episode 9, and we continue our interview with Nathan P. Butler. It's a great interview. We talk about evolution. We talk about dinosaurs in the Bible. Buckle up. This is going to be one wild ride. And now, our continuation of our interview with Nathan P. Butler.
Let's talk about two landmines here. That's fine. The Scopes trial.
The Scopes trial basically just put out the issue of whether or not evolution is basically the landmark decision that determined the relationship between evolution, creationism, and the classroom.
Sure.
What it has evolved into over various, you know, Supreme Court decisions and federal district court decisions and all that over the, you know, the years since is a notion where basically creationism is considered part of religion and therefore taken out of the classroom. It's all under that same concept that I think is somewhat of a misinterpreting of the First Amendment, where the First Amendment says that the government shall not establish a religion.
Right.
The government is not going to say this is the religion you must be, or specifically give extra promotion to one particular faith.
And why was that put in there?
Yeah, mainly to keep from persecution for the minority religion.
Well, I thought it was because we were concerned about the whole England state religion.
Right. Well, I mean, it's that goes right along with it.
See, okay.
The idea of you didn't want to see the type of abuses that we saw in Catholic France or
sure.
Protestant England against people who were of other faiths. Now, granted, by other faiths, in those cases, we meant different denominations of Christianity.
Right.
But still, the idea was to protect those minority religions over here and try to make sure that our government didn't get entangled with it.
Okay.
And it's been taken to now mean that you have to keep all religious anything out of school, no matter what religion it is or whether you're trying to cover it in a balanced fashion in many cases. It's very rare but possible to see a theology class in an American high school, but most of the time when you see it, it's taught as more of a sociology type class.
Sure. Or world religion, something like that.
Yeah. But yeah, the Scopes right. trial was what led us to that point in a sense, and it was just kind of one of those big landmarks when we think back of freedom of religion versus, you might say, freedom from religion.
Right. Now, the interesting thing about the Scopes trial is originally creation was taught unto itself. The Scopes trial involved, well, this is a theory of evolution. We want that to be taught alongside creationism. And there was a big fear, but in the end result of the Scopes trial is both should be taught. And because of the decisions and because of the misinformation about church versus state, keeping it separate, which is not in the Bill of Rights, not in any type of document. It was in a letter to Thomas Jefferson. There was a concern, kind of like what we're talking about, that the state would influence and create a religion that all would have to abide by. And so church versus state comes up probably not every day, but a lot. And what's interesting is Scope Trial said, let's teach both. But now we're back on the flip side to where we started from. No, we can only teach evolution. I don't think that's fair.
It's kind of one of those things where it depends on the context that you're putting it into. Now, I'm in the Atlanta metro area, which means that I was around for the controversy in one of the northern counties here around the Atlanta metro area where they had the controversy of the sticker in the textbook.
Mm.
Said evolution is a theory, not a fact, et cetera, and goes into create, and, you know, we encourage you to explore alternate explanations, et cetera, et cetera. To me, in education, part of the thing that we do, at least within history classes and within science classes, is we are to deal with what can be, in theory, proven.
Okay.
And, of course, there's a lot of argument whether or not it's possible to technically to prove evolution, given the huge span of time that it takes for evolution to make its changes, whether or not we can prove it when it comes to humans.
Right.
But from a scientific standpoint, it's much easier to prove that than to prove creation, because it would almost be like you have to create to prove the existence of a higher power, and there's really no way to do that in an experimental fashion. You could do it in a logical fashion,
right?
But not in an experimental fashion. So in a lot of cases, that is left out, and within a history context, you're able to bring in, I think, more more and more these days you're able to bring in some aspects of religiousness into it, because when you talk about different cultures, and there's a very big push right now for multiculturalism,
mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to talk about Arabic history, you bring in Islam, how it started, what the core beliefs were, that sort of thing, how, you know, Osama bin Laden and his ilk have twisted what is, in theory, a nonviolent religion into a fundamentalist version of it that takes certain passages and puts them into a violent context.
Okay.
And then when you get into stuff like the history of the early Israelites and that sort of thing, especially when you're talking about early Sumer and Egypt and cultures like that, there is an ability. You're still kept from, you know, talking directly about religion in the sense that you can't really, you know, go into, well, the Bible says this is part of history, blah, blah, blah. But you do have the ability to bring in little things like that. Like, for instance, I teach world history this year, and I have taught it at least a little bit the last few years. I had a classic tale called the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Mm-hmm.
And the Epic of Gilgamesh is one of quite a few different early world recorded texts, whether it's a story or a history, depending on which point of view you look at it as, that dealt with the concept of a great flood and a small number of survivors led by one man.
Right.
Now, they don't call him the same name.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, that the story is there. And we get into some of the things that are going on in terms of the archaeological digs that are going on to look for, you know, like they have found remnants of chariot wheels under the Red Sea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the notion of, well, how would that have gotten there? Could it be that the story of the Exodus could be true?
Mm-hmm.
And one, probably the biggest push that we've got right now with everything going on with the war on terrorism is the connection between Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Having that same, if you go back into the roots of the story, you know, where, you know, obviously Christianity and Judaism split off at the time of Christ, but
right.
You go back to the time of Isaac and Ishmael, and you get to see the split basically between the way the stories would go for what we would think of as Israeli now or Jewish culture versus Islamic.
Right.
And you can get into sort of that background and in a lot of cases bring in, you know, the religious stories as part of what is accepted as somewhat historic. Some people would say mythology, but you're able to bring that in and say, okay, well, whether you believe this or not, this is the way the story goes, and this is the best information we have at the moment. Now, do I think that necessarily we should be teaching religion classes in school? I would say, because of the way the First Amendment is set up, it's got to be an elective if you're going to
sure.
do it.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, you know, you would think that if you could choose to take it, then that should be fine, because it's not the school endorsing it, it is the individual choosing to do it.
Right.
And that kind of goes along the same idea as the school prayer.
Mm-hmm.
We have what we call 40 seconds of silent reflection.
Right.
Meditate, think about something, stare off into space, pray if you want to, pray to whatever God or gods you happen to believe in, or the force, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's there if you want it. We just can't tell you, now it's time to pray to the God of the Jews, or to the God
right.
of Shiva, or something like that. We can't, like, say something specific. But spirituality and that sort of thing, and religion have a place within education, if only for the simple fact that human beings are not just shaped by science.
Mm-hmm.
Human beings are not just shaped by what we know and what we can prove. Human beings are also shaped by what we believe. And in many cases, there have been things that have still thrown up questions about it. I have to teach as part of world history, you know, Australopithecus, Homo habilis, Homo erectus, mm-hmm. Homo sapien, and the whole, you know, evolutionary theory there. And when I was in school, I was taking that class in probably 1995. And when I was taking world history in 1995, we were being taught that it went Australopithecus, Homo habilis, Homo erectus, Homo sapien in the form of Neanderthal, then us.
Mm-hmm.
The Neanderthal are the closest ancestors we have to modern everyday humans by evolutionary theory. And in 1996, there was a DNA test run on the first Neanderthal bones found that showed that there is no way Neanderthals evolved into us.
Mm-hmm.
It's a separate branch, which got into the line of thinking about Cro-Magnon man, the idea that it could have been that Neanderthals and this, what we would think of as a modern human, the Cro-Magnons, would have been existing at the same time.
Right.
Which to me, you know, opens up the door for the fact that, hey, the things that we know aren't necessarily the things that we can prove all the time, because even the stuff that we think we found a way to prove sometimes turns out to be wrong and we go off on a different direction. And there's a lot of loopholes that open the door, even if you are a very, very strict believer in science.
Right.
It is very hard to get around the concept of how orderly the world is and how sophisticated the world is without some type of intelligent creative force behind it.
Sure.
And the fact that one of the things that we brought up as a possibility within our class, one of the students had mentioned was, well, wait a second, you know, if evolution was always pointing us to this idea of apes evolving into Neanderthal, and now here's this other human species at the same time, what if that other human species was not something created through evolution? What if evolution was going on over here with the creation of Neanderthal, who died out, and creation took place on the humans, and then the humans came in contact with the Neanderthals? That doesn't mean that there is evolution or creation. In that sense, there would be both. Mm. It's just that it's the question of, well, which species are you talking about? If you're talking about humans, in that case, it'd be creation. I mean, there's so many different ways to get into it. Anything that truly gets rid of religion and tries to toss religion or spirituality out the window, I don't think it'd really be a complete education. You've got to get all the different perspectives, because otherwise you're never going to be able to make up your own mind. You're just going to be indoctrinated into something that is the only thing you're going to believe, whether it's science, religion, or otherwise.
Well, let's kind of take this, and you bring up like 50 great points, and the one thing I just want to talk about is, it's interesting to me that I remember that Bishop back in, I think, the 30s or 20s, actually chronologically counted back the years of time in the Bible. Remember hearing about that?
It's been a long time. I remember hearing about it, but I don't remember the specifics at all.
Right, and he figured, I think it was like 12,000 years that the earth was, you know, around.
Editor's note, the bishop was named Bishop Usher. He lived from 1581 and died in 1656. He was an archbishop of Armagh, Ireland. By counting backwards from the known dates using the lengths of lives given in the Bible, Usher calculated that creation happened in 4004 BC.
And it's interesting that with evolution, that if something's not working, they just tack another few billion years on there. And they get together and they, well, okay, well, let's see, we can't, okay, there's no, you know, pictures of any, you know, ape-like people, so maybe a few billion years ago, maybe bigger, farther, with that one ape-like person. What was the name of that?
Lucy?
Lucy.
Yeah,
Lucy with bones that they couldn't really specify, that turned out to be animal bones when they tried to put it together, and they couldn't put it together, and so they drew a picture. And think, well, here she is. No, let's put her together. I mean, if we can find brontosaurus bones, then obviously we need to put her together. Oh, no, well, we can't find. Oh, okay. So there are these shady corners. But it's interesting with the Bible, when you dig down, there you go. There's Jericho. And there are the walls. Okay. But that doesn't prove it. No. Okay. Let's just keep digging then.
I think the way, it's very similar, the way that the approaches are taken, I think, to both what we would think of as, I guess, biblical archaeology versus paleontology and whatnot, in that in both cases, you're stemming from finding pieces of evidence and trying to put a whole story together.
Okay.
And in both cases, you already have the story in mind. In the biblical archaeology sense, you already have the biblical stories in mind, and you're trying to find the stuff that proves what we're finding is a small part and location and stuff that could prove the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, here's this piece and this piece, so if this piece is true, it stands to reason that this would be true also.
Okay.
But science is taking pretty much the exact same idea, which is, we have in mind this idea that evolution is the way it went, or that this is the way it went. So now we're looking for it, and all the little pieces that we find, even if they can't prove the entire structure, we're going to use that same line of reasoning and say, well, you know, if we found this, it stands to reason that that the rest of it must be true also. I think in both cases, it's going to be a very long time before we're able to say definitively anything about the ancient past, especially since a lot of the stuff that we're dealing with, in theory, we would think of, at least from the science side, as prehistorical, you know, which doesn't mean, you know, it's dinosaurs and stuff. But
right. Technically,
history begins with the first written language and the first ability to keep written records, which is in Sumer, with their cuneiform.
Sure.
Which means that you go back thousands of years to get to there, and that's one of the places that has the similar stories with the idea of a great flood.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, though, everything becomes very, very, very speculative. And it makes it hard to reconcile a lot of stuff between religion versus science versus whatever, because it's only now that we are starting to see a lot of different pieces come together. What I'd love to see at some point is a realization that in a lot of cases, people don't believe that science and religion can have any ties together.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
The idea that, well, this is the Bible, therefore it is religion, therefore it is myth, therefore it is not scientific, and then here is science, and here is all the information we have about science, but we're not going to try to compare it to the myths of religion, because that would be somehow tainting our research. If we could finally get to a point where scientists are willing to, and scholars are willing to accept the fact that not everything is a parable. Not everything is symbolic.
Right.
You know, maybe, just maybe, you know, I have a hard time reconciling, you know, just in my mind, I have a hard time reconciling the concept of creation versus evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And what the, and the way that the story is told in terms of what science is discovering, even in small bits, about, you know, the way that, that stars and planets and that type of things are formed.
Right.
I seem to find myself drifting more toward the concept of something like an intelligent design. That, you know, maybe the story of creation isn't exact. Maybe it's the way that we can understand it in any period of time, even now, that if God created the earth by putting these molecules and this together, you know, did this and this and this, that is why fire works. That
right.
is why this works.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be something more general in order to make it understood. And it's much more easy for me, I guess, to believe in a concept of the world being created in some way or another by an intelligent creator that has a plan for it. But it's hard for me thinking back into, well, you know, how do you reconcile all the different bits of it? I don't think there can really be any doubt at this point, just looking at how complex things are. The more that we dig down and we start to think that we are at the basics of life, we find something even further. Like we started with bodies, and then we discovered body systems, and then we discovered organs, and then tissues, and then cells, and then within the cells, you know, organelles, and molecules, and atoms, and now protons, and quarks, and everything. It just keeps getting smaller and smaller.
Right.
And it all works.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's possible that sort of thing could have come to exist without some type of guiding hand to it. And anybody even out there who's thinking, you know, well, you know, looking at all those stars up there, there must be aliens out there somewhere. Otherwise, you know, I mean, either way is kind of a breathtaking possibility. Either we're the only sentient beings out there at all, which is a pretty special thing, or there are other ones out there, which is pretty awesome by itself, because that leaves the possibility of maybe someday somehow making contact with them.
Sure.
But even if you're thinking in terms of, you know, alien life out there, well, you know what that would mean? That would mean you would have two ecosystems that were set up in such a way that they don't break down. Two ecosystems with that level of complexity. And you're still trying to tell me that there's not some type of creator behind it all?
Sure.
That, I can't buy that. There's too much. You know, the science says, well, there's so much evidence about evolution that religion can't be right. Really? Well, there's, you know, look around you at the evidence of just how things exist and operate within each other. It's the imperfections come from the things that we make. Cars break
That's
down.
True.
Planets
That's
don't,
true.
You know.
And then children that are born with defects or because of things that their parents took into their bodies.
Yeah, and many.
You know, or there are flukes involved as well, but it's the norm is a human woman and a human man come together and they produce sometimes a human child, you know, unless they're barren or something.
Right.
But it and they grow up just like the parents.
Yeah. Now, I would not say that when it comes to that, I am not a big proponent of the concept of faith healing.
Okay.
I mean, I do think that it is possible, but I would say I'm not one of those I'm definitely not one of those who would say your child is sick from a common cold or something like that, but don't try to use science to help them. Let them just sit there suffering and die.
No. There is sickness in the world, and a God has created doctors that he has guided or allowed them to use their mind to find cures for whatever it is. I do believe in prayer, but I also believe in doctors too. I think everyone has their place, and you know, definitely the doctor is the you need to go to. Get yourself checked out, you know, whether or not God heals you.
Another great time we get to sit down and talk to Nathan. This was a great interview. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed asking him questions that no one normally asks him and hearing him open up and just share from his heart and share how he feels about a lot of different things. And we're venturing into areas that probably will spark a lot of controversy and a lot of discussions when you start talking about, does God heal? Why do we need doctors? does God hear prayer, and those kind of things. Those are great for discussion, and we will have a show in the future about prayer, healing. Does God heal today? Why do people get sick? Why is there suffering today? And we will cover those subjects. And I just want to say that the Bible is God's Word, and it is a book that archaeologists have been quoted in saying they use the Bible to map out certain areas. When they dig in different archaeological sites, they use the Bible to plot out where things are. They also use the Bible in historical records when they do archaeological digs. The Bible is reliable. They've used the Bible as far as the lineages, going back, finding who has lived where, who is in whose family, and they use it as far as history. When a chariot is mentioned in a certain area, they use the Bible to prove science. And we will talk in depth in the future on Aroni's Own Radio about the Bible, but for the record, I just want to say that the Bible is God's Word. It is reliable. And I would stake my life on that. And also, we are open to discuss other things, to discuss other views. But since it's my show, my name's on the show, I always want to let the folks know what I believe. And it comes from the heart. So I thank you again for listening, and we're going to have a great time next time when we continue our interview with Nathan P. Butler. Thank you so much for listening. Well, that wraps up another Roni's Own Radio. I thank you for stopping by and downloading this and listening. I'd like you to drop by jrd-now.com, that's the website, and visit our forums for Roni's Own Radio and Tatooine TV and the other projects that we're doing and we're involved in. So leave your thoughts about shows or Roni's Own Radio in particular. Do you love it? Do you hate it? What would you like to hear? What do you never want to hear again? Leave your thoughts there in the forum. Or drop me an email at jeff.roni@gmail.com. And again, I thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time. Roni's Own Radio.